passing by. It must have been the same job. And they hollered at him, wanted him to come over and give him a hand. He says, sure. So he walked over and hooked the candle on the log. And before Roy, the Merle, could get theirs in, he gave a heave and rolled the log over. And they had a farm, it's the last place up on Tucker Hill. It's all grown up. There's just a big stone there now where the house used to be. It's got the, known around the valley here as being the stone. It's got the names and stuff going back to 1833 on the stone. And in fact, I got a picture of it here somewhere. And let's see, what's I going to say? Well, it's the barn went in at three different levels, basement and where the cows were and the other. And in where the cows were, they used to put the drums of syrup. They sold it mostly in bulk in those days. They could back the wagon up, and they'd be about 3 foot above the floor. And it was in the drums, and the empty drum was weighed 90 pounds. And it held 55 gallons. And Sterling told me, he said, I was trying to reach down, rustle one up on end. And I was like, you want a hand? He reached down, pulled it up one hand. And he used to roll along. And then a couple of them tried to roll up plank or something to get into the wagon. And Sterling says, well, I think I can handle that. So he reached down, pulled it up, walked over and rolled that drum of syrup into the wagon. And I figured up this. Somewhere around 700 pounds.
It's amazing the stories you hear about strong men.
Yeah.
In farming here, I remember you telling me that, and you talked about Hester and milking, but she'd always been, as you told me, kind of a girl that worked inside, and she really hayed better than, I mean, tell me a little bit about that.
Well, when we got married, she'd work most of the housework and stuff. She worked out through high school, you know, doing help around the house and stuff. When we got married, she'd never worked outside before. And so we didn't want to get married, she went right outside helping me out in the fields and that. The first thing I think that she's helped me put some sections in the mowing machine. I told her to put her hand in a different place, and I thought she'd moved it, and I moved it a little bit, and I think she still has a scar in the knuckle where she got caught one of the sections. But she never forgave me, because instead of sympathizing with her, I stood there and swore, and I said, that's the way I sympathized. I told her. She got out, like I said, she looked down, she can, all our hay was loose. We didn't bale it. And we did most of our own work. I'd stocked this field down the oats. And I had a couple of them tell me, you cut those all down, we'll be right up Sunday and help you. Well, we cut them all down. And I don't know what Sunday they planned to come, but they didn't show up. So we were about a week or more getting them in. We had to shake them out two or three times because it rained after that. We got those in. And she can load up load of hay better than most men. I used to always do the pitching on. And when it come to plowing, she went plowed over in the big field over in another place there. Used to be the old Smith place. And she'd get nervous after a couple of hours, but she'd go over there and she'd plow straight a furrow and do better. She'd do better than I can, I believe. And same with that. And the paneling, we got up out there in the kitchen, that black cherry paneling, down to where my boy has his house in the corner there, is some black cherry trees. So we went down with a crosscut saw. She got on one end and I did the other, and we cut the trees down, cut them up. I took them down to Baird's mill. He sawed them out, and we sent them down to Plant and Griffith in Jonesville, and they dressed them out. And I got back here, and I think 14 years after we got it cut out, I started to get them in there. When I had a day off, if I got one on the mountain, I'd bring a few boards in to set by the stove so they'd dry out. And that's how we put them, got them up. And Willie Bragg had somebody put just air dried and put them up and had to do it all over again because they dried out so much the tongue and groove part come apart, you know, as far as I had to do it over again. But I put mine back in the stove and let them dry for a week or so.
Now, did you work over at Mad River? When did you work over there?
Oh, I just got done. I worked there about 30 years, and I just got, or a little over, and I just got done, oh, I know, 4 years ago, I guess.
Well, tell me a little bit about the ski area coming in and all that.
Well, it didn't change too much. Mad River come in, and then they put Glen Allen in. It started, well, Sugarbush started expanding, you know, and then Glen Allen. And so it got to be out for first 10, 12 years. There wasn't a house out by us. They had a couple old farmhouses. The only time you see those fellas was deer hunting. And then they, some fellow and his wife, Davis, they moved in, built a house. Then some others did, and now there's, I don't know, 40, 50 houses out there. They got a regular development. And they go by here at, well, over the speed limit lots of times. They don't know you, and we don't know them. It was the best of the three ski tows. The you can go up there, and when I first went up there, they had just the one lift, and then they put a T-bar in. And there's only about 20, I say about 18, 20 of us working there. That's in the base box and all. And Roland Palomino run it. He's an Austrian, you know, and he's the one that put it in there. And after they sold a certain number of tickets along I'll say about now, there'd be a certain percentage put aside for a bonus. Then year we got a bonus, and divide it up depending on how you worked, how much you got, and how long you've been there. Had a kind of a scale like. And 1 year they had a bad year, and Roland put up $1,000 of his own for a bonus for the help. And there was some people named Bakewell. They used to put on a party for the help. Last couple hours on the way home from work, we'd stop there and they'd you know, visit, and they'd have, I don't know if I had a beer or not, we'd have soft drinks and sandwiches and stuff like that. And those days are long gone. Now it's got the, we got four lifts there and that, but well, I after I worked there, I think a couple of years, when I started in there, the minimum wage was $1 an hour, and I got a little over that, but I picked a fellow up, foot the hill there by the battleground, they call it, and he'd been over visiting. He said he was from Stowe. He said, boy, I like this Mad River. He said, I've never been over here before. He said, everybody knows everyone. He says, the skiers visit with the help the skiers. He says, I said, what do you do? He said, I worked over in Stowe. He said, I've been there for, I think he said he'd worked there for 5 years. He says, I take a blanket or something, sit in the chair and go up. He says, the skiers don't visit with the help, and the help doesn't say anything to them. And he said, that's the way it is. He said, I couldn't get over. He said, how everybody knew everybody up there, up here. And then he asked me how much I was getting. And I said, I think it was, I think it was $1.35 that time. I'd worked it a couple of years, so. He says, you are? He says, I worked at Stowe. He says, this, I think it's 5 years or more. He says, all I'm getting is $1.15. I said, well, Roland always paid the help pretty good. And I had a fellow come over from Sugarbush one time. Quit there. That's when they started to have pay time and a half if they worked over 40 hours. He says, you don't work 40 hours. You get 41 hours an extra hour. And he said, that's it. And he said, come over here. He says, they work you more hours. But he says, the pay is much better. He says, I'm making more than I ever thought of making it over there. He was happy. He got a lot bigger check because they paid a lot more an hour, quite a bit more. Of course, nowadays it's It's leveled out, but back there, it was a lot better. Of course, the help knew everybody, and there's a lot of natives help there then, quite a lot then.
What was the major difference between, say, Sugar Bush and Mad River?
Well, Sugar Bush started out, and they called it Mascara Ridge and that, and it's supposed to be the jet set and all that. And some of them get pretty overbearing, I know. But I never went over there. I never worked over there. I wouldn't. I didn't work Glen Ellen either. That, of course, that was started up more or less on a shoestring, but... Well, sometimes I worked bottom for a day or so. Then they put me up top of the single. There wasn't, during the week, you wouldn't get too many skiers back in those days. They still don't get what they'd like. And, well, I'm sort of a loner anyway. And, lost days I wouldn't see too many. And somebody like Klessen, had him up there, he'd pretty go wild. He had to have company around him, but that didn't bother me. And sometimes it read too. I'd sit there in the window and I got where I read a line, look down and see who was coming and be out there. You're supposed to be out single, a good thing. Because I had to go between the guys, you had to be ready to get that chair. And some days it was real quiet the first year or so. It would sometimes be 15, 20 minutes before somebody would come up. And when I first went there, they'd shut the lift down a half hour so everybody could go to lunch. And I don't know what they did, and what they did at the bottom, but it got where... we got paid right through lunchtime because we couldn't get off up top. They started to send somebody around, but that didn't work very good. They'd stop mid-station. Sometimes you'd eat at 11, sometimes it'd be 2 o'clock so in the afternoon. So, but it's changed a lot. The crowd's changed. The last year I was there, I had a couple come up, had a lodge there. And they said, we stood in line for 35 minutes and we didn't know a single person that was skiing there. And they'd skied there for years. So the crowd is all changed. As young ones growing up, of course, they get their families started and they don't get back to after they get established and later on they show up. And it got expensive. I had a fellow come here and buy a gallon of syrup off me one time. And he said, you know, I'm up just for the day. He said, we always used to buy a season ticket up Mad River, but he's up for the day, so we went over to Glen Ellen. And he says, just too expensive. He said, I've got a couple kids in college. And he says, maybe someday we can get back. But he said, right now, he says, we can't afford it. So that got away from a lot of them out of it. And I've told some, I said, even before I got done, I said, all these skiing, I said, it got to level off. I said, there's only so many in the population is getting established. In fact, it'd probably drop some. And so I said, it's not going to expand. They keep expanding all over, you know. I said, it's the same with schools, too. They keep wanting to expand those and more of that.
Well, I think we probably... tired you out. You've done great. Has it been as bad as you thought it would be?
I don't. I think maybe it was worse. Well, no, maybe not quite that bad.
It's much harder than, you know, just sitting at the kitchen table like we did. But you've done really well. I want to thank you.
Okay.
One last thing I need to do before we get up. I'll just move this out of your way. I just need to, we all need to sit quietly for about half a minute and record just the silence.
And also, before you get up, one of the things I forgot to do, I wanted to take a picture of you with the microphone, too.
Okay. Okay, so we'll just sit quietly now. This is room tone. That's the end of the room tone.
The room tone is so that